This week on Behind the Lens. City officials admit New Orleans is not funded the way it needs to be funded, as the City Council takes a look at New Orleans' finances and considers options for raising revenue to fill budget shortfalls. And more issues with grade inflation at local schools, this time in Jefferson Parish, where four school administrators have been placed on leave. I'm Jessica Rosegard. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
Mayor LaToya Cantrell scored what many considered a big victory this year with her so-called Fair Share infrastructure deal. The arrangement with the state could direct over $20 million a year to the New Orleans Sewerage and Water Board over the next decade. But it turns out that deal won't get the city anywhere near the $3 billion needed for the Sewerage and Water Board's 10-year capital improvement plan. Michael Isaac Stein has been reporting on this topic and joins me now. Michael, what is the basis of this 10-year improvement plan?
So the 10-year capital plan covers a really wide range of projects, and they kind of fit into all these various categories that the Sewerage and Water Board is responsible for. So some of that is clean water and making sure, you know, everyone has availability of clean, safe water, making sure our drainage system works, making sure our pumping system works. And so basically they've mapped out what, you know, they're going to build new underground canals, for example. So it's basically a conglomeration of all the projects they are either already engaged with or planning on doing within the next 10 years. This is not, however, you know, this kind of broad overhaul of our drainage system that's been talked about before. This is fixes and improvements to the current system, less than a broad overhaul. And, you know, like you said, $3 billion over 10 years, that averages out to somewhat, you know, $300 million a year. And starting in 2022, the fair share, you know, the revenue from the fair share deal, which is, a you know, $20 to $25 million a year, is going to be the only source of funding for that plan. So the 10-year capital improvement plan remains sorely underfunded.
All right. So there's a plan and there's no money for the plan. Are there other ways that Sewerage and Water Board can look to fill this funding gap outside of the Fair Share infrastructure deal funds?
Yeah, so I talked to Gilbert Montano, the chief administrative officer in Mayor LaToya Cantrell's office. And I think that, you know, one of the central strategies here is going to be for the Sewerage and Water Board to issue bonds. But what Montano was saying is that before the Sewerage and Water Board is going to be able to issue bonds, they kind of have to get their house in order. So, you know, paying down debts and things of that nature before they'll actually be able to do this. So you know, The sense I was getting is that right now the goal at the Sewerage and Water Board is to right the ship, get it running smoothly and well, get administration and finances in order. And then at that point, I think there'll be an attempt to bond out for more funding.
And how did the information about this funding situation come out? There was a meeting earlier this week where this was heavily covered.
So this is a new committee that the City Council formed. It was the first meeting of this committee, and the committee's goal is to basically hold a series of meetings from now to the end of the year, basically trying to take a bird's eye view of the city finances, right? Where do we get our money? What do we spend it on? Where is it being wasted? Where could it be spent better? And the council is aiming to issue a public report early in 2020. So this, again, yeah, it was kind of the kickoff event for that report. And, you know, they talked about the Sewerage and Water Board for a while, but kind of the overall theme of Gilbert Montano's presentation to the council is that a lot of the city's essential functions remain underfunded. Montano was talking about how, you know, in our general fund, every year we have around $700 million. He says, you know, to operate correctly, that should be closer to $800 million.
I think everybody in New Orleans is aware of the shortfalls at the Sewerage and Water Board and the need for repairs and also street repairs. What other gaps, what other areas need attention? What else did Montano say about that?
Yeah, so I think one of the big points he hit on was maintenance. He was very animated about the fact that the city does not have a dedicated maintenance fund, right? So, I mean, it's been talked about before, you know, for example, when you look at roads in the city, the Bureau of Governmental Research has pointed out in the past that we spend most of our infrastructure money on building new roads or completely revamping new roads, but not that much in actually sustaining the roads and saving money down the line so that you don't have to replace roads as often. The same goes for government buildings. You know, you see a small leak and it's easy to ignore, and then it turns bigger and bigger and suddenly you have to replace all the pipes in the building. So that was a big point for him, that the city needs more maintenance. He also talked about affordable housing, and that was actually an interesting point. I'm not sure how formed this plan is yet, but he was talking about how he wanted the city to kind of adopt a new affordable housing approach where the city would build and own affordable housing projects and then find a third party operator, which could be the Housing Authority of New Orleans, for example, to actually operate it. And so that's actually a pretty big departure on kind of business as usual affordable housing projects in the city, which are usually done with private developers with certain incentives. So those are two points that he hit on.
And funding for infrastructure maintenance isn't just a problem in New Orleans. It's a problem across the country. You know, we have aging roads across the country and bridges, and convincing the public to spend money on that kind of maintenance is usually a tough sell. So with so many gaps to fill in New Orleans City's budget, what's the plan?
There are two different measures that the administration is pushing for right now. One is $500 million in new bonds, which would be paid back over time through property taxes. And the other would be an increase in property taxes. Now, there's a lot that has to happen before either of those could go into effect. Voters would have to approve both measures in November when we go to the polls. So I guess the more achievable measure here seems to be the $500 million in bond issues. And, you know, that would be spent on a wide, wide variety of stuff. I think what the administration has said is that they want a bit of flexibility with this funding. Another, you know, frequent topic of conversation when it comes to the city's finances is that we have a lot of dedicated revenue. So, you know, these taxes that have to go to specific things, regardless of how much ideally we would have. So sometimes these things are underfunded or overfunded even. The argument being that responsible budgeting has some flexibility within it so that you're not stuck in a situation where suddenly you have to pull funding from, you know, schools because that's the only place where it's discretionary. And then the second measure here would be the 3 mil property tax increase. And so that, I think, is going to be a little bit tougher, mainly because right now in the city of New Orleans, there's a lot of reassessments going on properties. And, you know, with gentrification, with rising home values and property values, a lot of long-term homeowners are facing steep rising property taxes. And that's, you know, we've been talking about that for a long time now. So I think in the current, you know, kind of local political climate, it might be a little bit tough to convince people to increase property taxes. But the city is going to try to put that to the voters in November anyway.
Michael Isaac Stein, thank you for that update.
Thank you.
The issue of grade inflation at local schools extends beyond Orleans Parish, as four administrators at Helen Cox High School in Jefferson Parish were placed on administrative leave due to an investigation at that school. Marta Jusen has more on this story. Marta, how many students were affected at Helen Cox High School?
We learned on Monday that five seniors were affected by the grade changing. What I think is pretty interesting is they each had a grade change in a different class.
So if grades were changed for each student in a different class, that probably leads someone to think that it wasn't the teacher who was responsible for the grade changes.
Exactly. That's what Jefferson Parish Superintendent Cade Brumley said. In fact, they had questioned teachers. Teachers said they hadn't done that, which does lead one to think that it was more likely an administrator or someone else who had access to the computer system. So after those grade changes were discovered, Brumley said four administrators were placed on leave. He said right now they're going through due process. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen yet, but I'm sure we'll find out in the weeks to come.
We know many students at John F. Kennedy High School are still waiting for their diplomas, or they're in summer school classes because of grade inflation issues there. What's happening with these five students at Helen Cox?
So actually, it's very interesting to contrast these two situations. At Helen Cox, each of those five students had a grade changed in one class. So what Cade Brumley and his administrators decided to do was, okay, at the district level, we're going to create a proficiency test, and each student is going to take it in the class that was changed. So they came up with five tests. They tested all five students, and actually when we talked to them last week, they had just gotten the results back. He said that every student had passed, so essentially now there seems to be no issue with their graduation, unlike at Kennedy where we still have a couple dozen students, I think, are still in summer school. And I also talked to the state because I was curious if, you know, a proficiency test was an okay way to handle this type of situation since things are so different at Cox and Kennedy. And the State Department said, indeed, like, they were pleased with the outcome at Cox, and they handled it, addressed it, over and done.
If Helen Cox was able to do that, any inkling about why a similar thing couldn't have happened at Kennedy?
Well, we know seat time was an issue at Kennedy, so if we were worried about kids' classes and grades counting, and they were taking classes online, we know that was happening. And so in addition to not just taking a proficiency test, those kids have missed like days and weeks of school. And I think that's probably the big difference, although I don't know for sure.
And as you just mentioned, seat time and attendance issues at Kennedy, there are issues with students' attendance records at Cox as well.
Right. Mr. Brumley said that they found out, I think it was about 24 students had unexcused absences. And with whatever number they had, they weren't going to be able to complete graduation unless they could get those absences excused. As of early last week, he said they had 22 of the 24 were good to go. They had excuses for their absences, and they're still trying to reach the other two.
How was this issue at Cox discovered?
I'm not sure exactly, but what seems to have happened is either an employee came forward or perhaps a student came forward. It sounds like Jefferson Parish administrators were the ones who got the tip, and then they went ahead and investigated, and then they told us what they found.
It kind of makes me wonder, since this issue was so small, the impact of this issue was so small at Cox, it kind of makes me wonder if it would have come out at all had it not been for the big story that was Kennedy.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think we really know, so we'll just wait and see. And if we're hearing about this more often, then maybe it's something people are recognizing and talking about more often. You know, that could be the case, too.
That more often point is interesting to me, too, because it almost seems like an epidemic, you know, and with this issue of student performance really affecting a school's ranking, and if a charter gets renewed, there does seem to be this problem where administration officials might be tempted to cook the books in order to keep their rankings high. So what are we doing? What are school districts doing to try and prevent this kind of thing from continuing or from happening?
In Orleans Parish, the district is going to hire an assistant director of high school accountability. That's a new position. We haven't seen that before here. And I really do think that was in response to the problems at Kennedy. That person is going to audit high school records and student transcripts and make sure that schools are providing kids with what they need to meet the state standards for a diploma. Over in Jefferson Parish, it sounds like they're going to start doing a similar thing too. They haven't elaborated as much, but Superintendent Brumley did mention that they were going to start making sure they were tracking student transcripts and doing spot checks on them.
And it's worth noting that Helen Cox is not a charter school. So what I just mentioned about school performance being a factor in charter renewal doesn't directly impact Helen Cox, but student performance at schools does matter. Meanwhile, you also reported this week that teachers at another local school were instructed to not issue failing grades on semester report cards.
That's right. We learned that at Cog Hill Charter School in Gentilly Woods that a board member had directed teachers and staff not to do that. So it appears that the Orleans Parish School Board is very concerned with the fact that it was a board member who issued that directive. It is not immediately clear to me whether or not a policy like that would be a problem on its own. So I think that's something we'll see in time. And I do know that some schools have policies that you only give kids a 50 on a test if they miss it, so as not to throw off their average. Other schools have policies of no zeros. So it's not immediately clear if it was the policy that was the problem, but it's definitely a problem that it was coming from a board member.
Not giving a zero on an exam or a missed assignment, that makes sense because, like you said, you don't want to throw off an entire grade for a student based on, you know, a zero. But this is a semester grade that we're talking about.
Right, you're right. This is not just a single incident. And to your point before, I had talked to a teacher today who was like, especially a zero in on like the second or third assignment of a year, that can really just throw a kid off and, you know, make them not feel motivated at all to try to correct what seems like an inescapable problem or failing grade. But you're right, this directive was issued more on the back, on the end of things towards when grades would be entered. I really don't know what's going to happen here, but it's something we need to keep track of, and we have to figure out where the district and the state come down on policies like this.
Because ultimately the question is, you know, does that policy help a student or ultimately hurt a student?
Exactly.
And on that point of helping or harming students, you spoke to yet another student this week from Kennedy who has questions about his grade and his diploma and his ranking in his graduating class. Who did you talk to and what did you learn?
I spoke with 18-year-old Dwight Crenshaw. He was one of the Kennedy seniors, so obviously he's had a bit of a rough spring. For him in particular, the grading, the alleged grade inflation, presented quite a unique situation because he didn't have any problem graduating. He actually talked a lot about the school and that he thought it had a lot of problems, but that he's realized that since he was a freshman. So he says he really took things into his own hands to make sure that he could finish strong. His goal was to graduate, you know, top five in his class. Obviously, valedictorian is something that he would love to achieve. And in particular, he told me, you know, his parents weren't really around growing up. His grandmother raised him, and he wanted to do this for her because he wanted to get set with college scholarship money by having a good class rank. And that was his goal. That's why he's worked so hard.
So Dwayne, like you said, took it upon himself, worked really hard, really focused. He took the responsibility to make sure that he would be set and graduate near the top of his class. How did this grade inflation situation at Kennedy impact him?
So it impacted him because towards the end of the year, it appears that GPAs shifted. He said 4 weeks before graduation, he checked his transcript and his records, and he was second in his class, which would be the award of salutatorian. He was very happy with that. He said he had a friendly competition with the valedictorian and that they'd, you know, go back and forth over the 4 years of high school, both just trying to do the best that they can. Then as awards night was approaching, he said he learned that he had dropped to fourth in his class, which to him was a number that is kind of neither here nor there. It's not one of those two top spots that he had worked so hard to get. And what the lens knows from reviewing emails in June was that it appears Kennedy administrators and the contractors they hired to, you know, figure out who was graduating and who wasn't also weren't sure about how they were calculating GPAs. They had no idea the extent to which these credit problems were affecting GPAs or the extent to which the software had counted credits in wrong places. And so literally the morning of graduation, a few people were emailing back and forth, and they were saying, hey, I don't know if we have confidence in these numbers. Another employee said something along the lines of like, well, look, we're not going to be able to figure it out today. I have no idea what to advise. And then a third employee said, well, what if we just waited to award valedictorian and salutatorian because we don't really know? And that was the end of that conversation. So we have graduation programs. There's a valedictorian and a salutatorian listed in them. Dwayne is not one of them. I think he just wants to know what went into all of this. He just wants the truth.
Sure, it's hard to not have those answers when it does really impact, you know, your future and your plans. You talked to Dwayne and his grandmother, Tanya Scott, earlier this week. Let's take a listen to some of what they had to say.
I had questions. Just like Ms. Nicole Cooper, that's assistant principal, when she asked, how did you all get the GPA for the valedictorian and salutatorian? I want to know how to, you know, I really do. Because I did, when this first happened, someone answered at Kennedy. And she said, sometimes it doesn't go by. They use other methods to get the valve and sell. And I'm like, other methods? I have never in my life heard of any other methods, but GPA is used for the valedictorian and salutatorian. But nobody never returned my call after that. And he's saying he's working with families. I want to know, how is he working with families? You know, because he sure never reached out to us. And to say this happened to him, graduation, he would never get this from that moment back. It's a moment in life that you will never get back. And to do that to a child, it's just so hurtful at that moment, because we just knew he was going to be something, because we knew how hard his work, and it's so heartbreaking.
So again, Dwayne Crenshaw, one of many students affected by allegations of grade inflation at John F. Kennedy High School. What are his plans going forward?
So Dwayne's getting ready to leave for college. He's going to go to North Carolina A&T, wants to major in biology and become a doctor. So he is definitely forward-looking right now. And when I was sitting with him and his grandma, you know, there was kind of this moment of, well, how do I keep trying if I don't ever know what the end result will be? And his grandma said something along the lines of, like, I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, you just have to keep going. So they had this really nice exchange. But I know he's looking forward to school, and he kind of wants to just get out of New Orleans, especially after the spring.
Yeah, it must be hard when you work really hard and somebody interferes with that and just kind of upsets all of the hard work that you did. It's probably hard to trust the system after that. But like his grandma said, you gotta keep going. Marta Jusen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Behind the Lens. I'm your host, Jessica Rosegard. We'll be back next Friday. In the meantime, please consider supporting independent journalism in New Orleans. Go to support.thelensnola.org and make a donation today.